good afternoon, everybody. So is it fall weather that's got everybody just kind of melancholy? Is that what it is? You're not so energetic today. I'll admit, I kind of feel the same way. Yeah, what'd you say? I'm looking for that also. I'm just not wishing things would speed towards it as they feel like they are. Yeah, I'm not looking forward to winter either. So how did everybody's week go? Fantastic? Not so fantastic? There's some on both sides, kind of in the middle. Well, I thought I was having a pretty good week until... it was more probably last night. So when I go to put together a message, usually I try by Tuesday to have my topic matter in mind. Kind of that's ready to go, and I'm already starting to formulate a little bit of an idea where I'm going with it. And then between Tuesday and Friday, I'm assimilating whatever it is, what the content might be. But not necessarily organizing it all that much. Just, I think I want to include that, I want to include this. And then by Friday night, I start organizing it, and then Saturday morning, I get up and kind of put it together. Well, this week, that's the way it started off, and outside of that, my week was going pretty good. Then on Thursday morning, my sister called me and said that my mom had had an R episode where she hit, abused one of her caretakers, and that's kind of been going on over the last big handful of months. And the facility was asking us, in a sense, that we should inquire as to whether or not she's getting the best treatment. Basically meeting medication that she could for events like that. And they, along with my sister, had been talking to Sparrow Hospital and came up with a game plan that yesterday morning I was to take her into ER and basically ask for a psych evaluation specifically because of dementia. And so we get there about 10 a.m., and there's a huge blessing in this for me from the standpoint, because of COVID, I don't get to spend hardly any time with my mom. And especially, contact. We're supposed to wear masks in one sense and stay 6 feet apart. We're supposed to meet out on a deck. Well, yesterday morning, I was to go pick her up and, take her to the ER. And so I kind of took my time getting to the hospital. It was partly sunny in the morning. And, there's still enough colored leaves on the trees that we kind of took the back roads and got to just enjoy a little bit of time out. It was her first time out of the facility since probably February. And so that was kind of nice. And then, I knew we'd be sitting together in the waiting room for a while. The while turned out to be 5 o'clock, and then 6 o'clock, and somewhere around 6 o'clock, they didn't find an emergency room for us to go into. They found a bed in the hallway that we could move to. So we went from the emergency waiting room to a bed in the hallway. And then around 9 o'clock, finally the doctor that we kind of needed to be seeing or should be seeing. That's when they would kind of come around. And about 12:30 in the morning, we finally made the connections that we were hoping to make. So it was a really long day yesterday, and there's challenges with that. I had stopped and got her and I a coffee and a hot chocolate before I picked her up, and some donuts. We both kind of liked that stuff. And so we had those on the way, and I think I was pretty certain she had breakfast before I got there. But in the waiting room, they don't offer you any of that. They don't offer you water. In fact, they don't want you bringing in anything from outside. And the other challenge is, usually my sister would do things like this so that she could take her to the restroom or something like that. And I didn't. And come around 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, Mom hadn't asked me, she needed to go. But I just knew, you know. So I finally had to ask the, she's not a receptionist, I think, you know, she's probably, you know, she was the take-in nurse, you know, registration nurse. Just explained to her, I can't take my mom to the bathroom, but, you know, could you find somebody? She says, yeah, I will. Of course, that was almost an hour before that person come around. And Mom dealt with it really good. But I really had to go, too. And I didn't dare give up the waiting room. By that point, the waiting room was crowded. So I didn't dare give up our two spaces there. So I didn't go while she was in the restroom. I just thought, well, at some point, they're going to take us back to a room, and then Mom will be secure, in a sense, and I can run to the restroom. And it was another, you know, half hour, 45 minutes before all that happened, and I finally got to go. And then around 9 o'clock, why, the nurse that was taking care of us realized Mom hadn't had anything to eat, so she brought her something to eat. And but yeah, I got home right about 2 o'clock this morning. And then in the hospital, we're not in the basement, but I call it the basement because it's the interior of the first floor is where the emergency room is at. And there's virtually no cell service. However, they do have free Wi-Fi. So throughout the day, I was getting texts and sending texts to, you know, some of the family. And at one point in the afternoon, I got a text from my boss. He just said, please call me. And he never says, I say my boss, Alan is the father. Jason is the son. But, you know, usually he would have called. And I wasn't thinking about the fact my phone can't receive calls right now. And I can't make a phone call out. But I get this text. And so I just text him back. I just said, with my mom in the ER, everything is okay. But I can't, I'll have to call you later. And he texts back, okay. So I didn't really think anything of it, other than it was just strange that he sent that text. And when I got out of the hospital last night, after I dropped my mom off, I got back in the car and knew I had, that my phone had got bombarded with things I'd missed during the day. So I was kind of flipping through those, and there's a text from my boss. He says, I needed to let you know that Jason's father-in-law committed suicide at his house this afternoon. And that's, Jason and I are very close. And his father-in-law is from Missouri and was really struggling with alcoholism. And back over the summer, Ashley went to Jason, just said, can we move my dad in with us so we can get a handle on his alcoholism? Jason said, yeah, no problem. So they went and got him, brought him to Michigan, put him through a treatment, and then and had him living in his house. And as of tomorrow, he was going to have his own apartment. He leased an apartment. And Tom is his name. I've talked with him a handful of times, met him, real nice guy. And this was a huge turn of events. His whole world turned upside down with this move and everything. And he didn't seem to be against it, but again, if you think about it, his whole world just turned upside down. And he's moved up to Michigan with his daughter and son-in-law and their two boys, living in their house. He's used to living by himself. And he doesn't have friends up here. Problem is, the friends he had down there were heavy drinkers as well. That's not a good situation. He understood that. He admitted that. Now the reality is he's going into an apartment where he knows nobody, and he's not going to be around his family every day. And I think there was other issues involved, but he ended it yesterday afternoon. And my friend Jason had to find it. And thankfully, it wasn't the two young boys. It was their grandpa. But that, you know, me receiving that at 2:30 in the morning, there's nothing I can do. I can pray, but there's nothing. I can't make a phone call. It's too late. And I felt bad for Alan, the father, or, because I knew he would have wanted to talk, and I flipped through some more of my messages, and there's the sheriff's department calling me out to that suicide. I told you I work for the volunteer for the sheriff's department, and I wasn't on call, but it just happened that for whatever reason I got that text, which I didn't get until 2:30 in the morning, and it's just strange. I started thinking about that, and it's like, I wonder what God had up his sleeve. There's blessings in here somewhere. I wonder what God had up his sleeve, because I don't understand it at the moment. I wish I could have been there for Jason and Ashley and Alan. But at the same time, I don't know how much good help I would have been getting that text. I know how to get to their house, but I didn't know their house number. And the text told me basically to arrive at a corner. It gave me a house address, but then it gave me the crossroad closest to it. And I read that, and I wouldn't have suspected anybody just from that information. So I would have literally been driving to the scene, and it wouldn't be until I got, real close to that driveway that I would have realized, oh my, oh no, what's happened? And I don't have information. At that point, I wouldn't have had information who the suicide was. So think about all the thoughts that would have ran through my mind in those few minutes driving up to that house and wondering what I'm about to step foot into. So God is merciful and loving all the time. And as I mentioned in my prayer, Jason and Ashley and Alan, Jason's dad, their family, they're Catholics, but they don't call themselves, children of Christ. They go to Catholic Church. That's what they do. And maybe this is going to be somewhat of a wake-up call for them. I hope so. Maybe there's opportunity for me or some of the rest of us to be of benefit in their walk. But we don't know what God's doing. Then there's the other side of it. We don't know what Satan's doing. And was Satan involved with this? Probably was. But what I want to talk about today, I titled this, Our Battle with Satan. We need to understand when and how does Satan get involved. So let's start right in the beginning. Let's go back to Genesis 3. And starting in verse 1. It says, now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said unto the woman, yea, hath God said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? And the woman said to the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, ye shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it, lest ye die. And the serpent said to her, ye shall not surely die. For God doth know that in the day that you eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and you shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof, and did eat, and gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. Now, when I read this passage earlier this week, I realized that prior, I had a misconception here. I had a misconception that the serpent was in the tree, coiled up in it somehow, and that she approached the tree, and the serpent happened to be there, and that's when he engaged her. But it doesn't say that. It that might have been the case, because it doesn't say it, but the serpent was simply in the garden. Was it wrong for her to interact with the serpent? Did she know that she shouldn't interact with the serpent? Doesn't say that. But the first words out of the serpent's mouth "Has God said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden," should have sent tingles up and down her spine, knowing that there's a challenge that was just made. And at that point, she's got a little tiny signal that something's not right. And what takes place next, she should move very, very cautiously about. And she didn't. The woman said, "We may eat of the trees of the garden," but the truth, she states back exactly what God has told her. So she does know what she's to do or not to do. And then the serpent says, "You shall won't die." And instead of interrupting him and saying, "Stop," she allowed him to keep going. And she bought into the lie. He didn't yank her by the foot, the wrist, the hand, and make her do anything. He deceived her. So we have to ask ourselves, what can Satan do to us? Here, we don't see him yanking, pulling, dragging us somewhere we don't want to go. He simply deceived her. He deceives us. That's one of the things he can do. Let's go on to Job 1, verse 6. Job 1, verse 6, "Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them." Where was this at? I don't know. But Satan's there. "And the Lord said to Satan, where comest thou? And Satan answered the Lord, and he said, from going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down it." Here's a thought. He had to walk up and down the earth, walking to and fro. We have other scripture that says he looks, seeks to see who he can devour. Is Satan omnipresent? Is he everywhere at one time? I don't think he is. If he has to seek who he can devour, he keeps looking. And then in verse 8 it says, "And the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? Yet there is none like him in the earth, perfect and upright man, one that feareth God and excuses evil." And Satan answered the Lord and said, "Doth Job fear God for nothing or for naught? Has not thou made a hedge around him and about his house and about all that he hath on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in thy hand," or in the land. Satan just said, "I can't touch him. I can't even touch his land. You've put a hedge around even his land." Satan moves on, looks for easier pickings. But then Job says, "But put forth thy hand now and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee back to thy face." And the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, all that he hath is in thy power. Only upon himself put not forth thine hand." So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord. He was with God, and then he moved away. He's not omnipresent. And now all of a sudden he has opportunity. And so he took advantage of that opportunity. And we see that, in fact, Job did not curse him. Job 2 in verse 1, another passage with a similar wording. Again, there was a day when the sons of God came before, I can't read it because there's a title thing over. Oh, that was the other thing that happened this morning. So I took my printer to the feast with us and hadn't set it up before this morning. It worked great at the feast and before the feast. And I plugged it back in this morning thinking it would recognize my router and everything. I wouldn't have to reconfigure anything. Yeah, that's not the case. So I didn't get to print off my notes. So that's the reason I'm using this. Job 2 and verse 1. They presented themselves before the Lord. And Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said unto Satan, from whence dost thou comest? And Satan answered the Lord, said, going to and forth on the earth, walking up and down it. And the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, perfect and an upright, one that feareth the God and excuseth evil, and still he holdeth fast his integrity, although you moved me against him to destroy him without cause. And Satan answered the Lord and said, skin for skin, yea, all that a man hath will he give for his life. But put forth thine hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse thee to thy face. And the Lord said to Satan, behold, he is in thy hand, but save his life. So when Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot unto his crown. So now we see something else. Satan had to ask for permission to touch his flesh. Is that the same case with us? I don't know, maybe. Because I know God loves us just as much as he loved Job. Job was more righteous maybe than the rest of us. But he has the same love for us. The same mercy. And he also knows that we probably can't withstand Satan's temptations to the same extent that he knew Job could. And he says he's not going to put on us something more than we can bear. So again, how much can Satan do to us? So far, we know he can deceive us. Can he really do anything else? We talked here a few weeks ago, he can't create. Now, is he all by himself? He is not. He took a third of the angels with him when he was cast out of heaven. Right? Did I phrase that right? They're now his demons, his lackeys. And they're just as aggressive as he is. But I think they have the same restrictions on them that as Satan has on us. We turn over to, you got a question, Lori? And my coffee, please. Thank you.
I was going to say that I think the only way that Satan might be restricted from us is if we have a relationship with God. Otherwise, I don't know that Satan would necessarily be restricted from, you know, doing something to us, because, you know, if you look at people who, you know, who are possessed or whatever, I don't know. I personally can't see God allowing that if somebody has a relationship with God. I mean, that's my thoughts.
No, that's what Job points out very clearly. It starts off by telling us the characteristics of Job. Each time that Satan is in front of God, we see the characteristics of Job first. And that because of that, God has placed a hedge not just around him and his family, but even around his land. And I hadn't really thought about that aspect before, that God protects our stuff even. I know while we were at the feast, this was the first year that we went in a lot of years, we didn't have a dog at home. You know, a dog can be a pretty good deterrent at times. And we had nothing at home. We've always had a dog inside the house and someone coming and checking and taking care of the dog while we were gone. This year, we didn't have any of that. I had three cameras that would send me notifications if they saw something. And, of course, I had one in the garage, one in the kitchen, one on the front porch. The front porch, I expect that to go off intermittently from time to time just because the wind blew or it heard a strange noise outside or something like that. But the one in the garage, I don't know what was setting that thing off. But at least once a day, I'd get a notification that there was motion sensed inside of our garage when there wasn't. I could play back the tape. There was nothing there. Maybe a fly running around in there or something like that. But this year I asked God very specifically to protect, you know, our home and our stuff while we were gone. And I know he did. But yes, if we're not seeking God, why would he bless us? He loves us. And he's put some things in motion for everyone. But if we don't choose to start turning towards him, our ability for forgiveness is still there. And that's great love, mercy, and grace. But the blessings aren't there. At least in the way that we would hope they would be there. In fact, we can say that there's cursings. Because when we're not seeking God, what we're doing is breaking the first commandment. We've chosen another God. And what we usually don't realize is that our first God isn't another idol out there somewhere. It's within. I'm good enough. I can take care of this all by myself. I choose to bless myself. And God says, okay, I don't think you have a whole lot of experience, but go ahead. You can bless yourself. And to me, that's a curse because as human beings, our ability of blessing, especially ourselves, is so inferior that it's actually a curse. I think I'm doing the right thing or the best thing or the thing that would benefit me the most, when in fact it's the thing that will probably hurt me the most. In James 4:7, he says, submit yourselves therefore to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Submit yourselves to God. Have we truly decided to turn our entire life over to God? Or are there still aspects that we're holding back on? Resist the devil. That's what Eve didn't do. Because it says here, if she would have resisted him, that even if he was still in the garden, he would have fled from her. Left her alone. And we wouldn't be in the state of confusion that we're in right now. But then we need to turn over to Ephesians 6. Because God says, not only has he put some restrictions on Satan, but he's also given us some things that we can do. to protect ourselves. Ephesians 6 and verse 10. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord in the power of his might. So is he truly God to you? We call him Father. We call him our God. We call him our Messiah. But is he truly God to us, able to do miracles that we can't even comprehend? And do we ask, especially in those times when we need something that is miraculous, do we truly go to him? Or do we pick and choose when we're going to bless ourselves or when we want him to bless us? Verse 11, put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. That sentence right there says, if you do these next following things, you're going to be able to stand triumphant, not beat up with scars and wounds all over you, but triumphantly, courageously stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Stand in the evil day. Are we at the evil day yet? You think so? It's not tomorrow. Next week? Yeah. 2 months from now?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're there. We can't take any of this lightly any longer. I know this is one of those passages that we read over on a regular basis. We hear it on a regular basis. But how much do we truly try putting it into our life? Yes, we do. Where was I at? Because he says, yeah, verse 13, that you will be able to withstand in the evil day. So that means we can go through today, tomorrow, 2 months from now, 2 years from now, no matter how evil it gets, no matter who becomes president, we're going to be able to withstand how bad it really gets. And having done all, meaning do all these things, you're going to be able to stand. Stand therefore, having your loins girt about with truth, and having on the breastplate of righteousness. Your loins girt about with truth. What does that mean? The belt of truth. It's his word. How many of you, I'm not asking for a show of hands, how many of you read it through cover to cover more than once? If you haven't done that and you're not putting effort into it right now, you've already failed. Because you don't know what's in there and you don't know where it's at so that you can look it up when you really need it. And sadly, a lot of us put things in our heads that aren't in there, and we think they are in there. And so that's how we live our lives. Put on the belt of truth. I'll challenge you right now. If you haven't read the Bible cover to cover, start today. There's an app on your phone or that you can get on your phone, on your laptop, on your computer. And now you can get a lot of these Bibles that will have a read the Bible through in 1 year, and they'll have multiple ways to do it. You can read it chronologically, meaning from start to finish, not chronologically, but from cover to cover, in a sense. You can read it chronologically, which means when the story it gets repeated, rather than reading it three times separated, you'll hear all the accounts at the same time, and you'll move through in the calendar or the timeline series. You can get it so that you read a Psalms per day and a Proverbs per day, and then another passage per day, but over the course of the year, you're going to read the entire book. Get on one of those plans. It literally takes less than 15 minutes per day. And it's so easy. Sitting in the ER yesterday, how many chapters, or not just chapters, but days could I have went through? And I didn't. It was kind of a very distractive day. There was a lot of entertainment around me, sorry. But when I'm on the road in my vehicle, you know, I've been traveling to the Bames quite a bit this summer. That's a little over an hour. I listen to the Bible. I listen to it on average probably about 4 to 5 days per day that I drive. But even if first thing in the morning, you just get up and you read for 10 to 15 minutes, you're going to go through the whole Bible in 1 year. You do that once, and you're going to be shocked at how many times you think, wow, I didn't realize that was there. And then the second, third, fourth, fifth time you read it, oh, wow, how could I miss that the first, second, and third times I read it? And it finally jumps out at you. It's very exciting. It's very intriguing. But you need to do this. If you don't do this, you failed. That hedge now doesn't exist the way you wish it would exist. And Satan sees that hole in it that he can pick away at. And he's not fleeing. He's working on you. So that was the belt of truth. Then having the breastplate of righteousness. What does that mean? How do we wear righteousness? We shouldn't just be fleeing Satan. It's all the evil. You know, it's catching me a little bit off guard, and this year I admit it seems so much more extreme than ever before, but the Halloween decorations. 10 years ago, they kind of meant nothing to me. It was like, that's just what some people do. I don't celebrate Halloween. But, it's just stuff. Now I look at it and I go, and it's an irritation. It makes me mad because I see what a slap in the face it is to God. And I didn't see that before I started reading his word. And 10 years ago, you know, I'd read these passages about someone weeping over the conditions on the earth, and I didn't get that. I didn't know what that really meant. And it's not that I weep over the Halloween stuff, but I do. I look at it today, and it literally makes me mad. So to wear righteousness is to put away those things out of our lives that are unrighteous. That means the TV show, the music, the book, maybe even the friend. The person who is making you move your morality line the wrong direction. Are you willing to do that? That's putting on the breastplate of righteousness. Verse 15, and your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. This is the one I wrestle in terms of understanding. What does this mean? I feel like I know what the gospel is, but what's the gospel of peace? And here the other day, I think I got some insight into it. I don't know that this is 100% accurate, but at the feast this year, Johnny and I had a very unfortunate situation take place. We had an individual confront us on something that didn't have anything to do with the feast. And they confronted us in a way that was just horrendous. Verbally. And to the point, and they did it separately. They found both of us at within moments of each of these events. They found us each separately, but then gave us the chewing out, you know, one right after the other. And afterwards, when Johnny and I got to sit down and talk about it, we both said the same thing. I thought I was going to get hit. Not just slapped. I mean full outright knocked out. This person was that angry. But you know what Johnny and I both said? I can get pretty tense and I'll start shaking a little bit. And Johnny and I both said, you know, we realized in the moment, both of us were just standing there as calm as could be, not afraid of getting hit, not afraid what might happen next. We were just calm. There was a sense of peace about it. We stood with peace in our feet. We weren't looking to lunge forward, and we weren't looking to run away. We just stood there at peace. I think knowing that we were protected in the moment, that this was something God was going to deal with, that wasn't for us to turn vengeance on at the moment. I think that's what that means, is are we prepared for any event that will stand there in peace, knowing that God's going to take care of me? I don't like this. It doesn't feel good, but God's going to take care of this. Even if one of the worst case scenarios in my mind takes place, it's still a good scenario because God makes all things good. And I don't understand what he needs to make good right now, but I know he's going to do that. So can we stand peacefully no matter what the event is? Does anybody have any comments about this one? Any thoughts about it? Rick?
Yeah, as you know, I've recently been going over. I got a copy of the 1911, the original Boy Scout handbook. And that that sure is a kick, because you see the contrast between what we have today and what was then normal. But one of the things I noticed was that the Scouts had a motto of be prepared. And you remind me of that. And, of course, we're told to always be prepared to have an answer. Why our faith in Yahshua? And so I think that that's a really good subject. And maybe some of our young Scouts or Scout age people might want to look at that. And because there's a lot of parallels with the bearing of good fruit and having right confidence, not arrogance or flippance, but right confidence. And yeah, it's a... When you've turned it over, you know, it's not your doing anymore. When you've turned it over to the big guy, and I don't mean to be too informal, but then you can relax. And I found that in a couple of instances, I had the same experience you did, where people were really wroth, really worked up, boiling. And just being calm, you know, rage going on all around you and some wild gestures and everything else, but just being calm, listening, you know, nothing violent, no violence occurred. So I praise Yah for that. That his word is real, baby.
I had an experience the last couple weeks. We haven't been here in a while. And maybe I should have brought this up at testimony time. But some of you know that I've had a younger lady come in and help me once a week with some of the house chores. And when I say young, I'm looking at the young ladies over here. This lady's about 40, but that's still young to me. But she came in with a Black Lives Matter t-shirt. And I was upset. This is my home. That is not my belief. And we've been different a lot from the very beginning. And I knew that she was totally different than I. Her, in fact, she told me that she didn't believe in the Bible. You know, so we were really different. But this was the last straw in a personal attack on me and my home. And we talked a little bit. And I'm not sure that I was as strong as you two. Finally, she said, "Do you want me to leave?" And I said, "Yes, I think that's good." So she no longer worked for me. But when your very core, you know, when she said she didn't believe in the Bible, first she told me at one time she was reading the Bible, and I said, "That's good." But I said, "Sometimes you need people around you to help you with the Bible, because the Bible is not easy to understand." And I told her, you know, this is the thing my dad used to say. He said what he didn't understand about the Bible didn't bother him. It was what he did understand. And she said it like that for where she was, you know. But, you know, so that relationship had been broken because I called her a day or two afterwards. And I said, at the time we didn't attack each other, it was our beliefs, you know. We didn't get personal or angry with each other. It was the belief. And I said, maybe we could get together and talk about this. But I never received a call back. So I don't know. I think I'm a little weaker than you guys, but I did stand my ground in that I wasn't going to have a relationship anymore. And sometimes I guess you have to dust off your shoes, you know. Thank you for listening.
So that was the shield of faith, where you shall be able to quench the fiery darts of the wicked. So do we have that faith? Do we know that God's going to take care of us at all times, in all ways, in any manner that he needs to, for our benefit in the long run? Do we have that faith? And do we allow him to do that? Or again, do we step in his way and decide to protect ourselves from something? Right now, with what's going on in the world, there's a lot of people trying to protect themselves rather than allowing God to do it. It can be done in a lot of different ways, but you know, the question has to be asked of each of ourselves. Am I trusting God in this? Or am I worried that he won't come through this time? Because when we put on the shield of faith, then that is what quenches all the fiery darts of the wicked. Notice they're fiery darts. Doesn't mean that the enemy is right up against us. They're at a bit of a distance, and they're just checking to see if they're going to make a real hit. And without the shield of faith, that means we've got some big cavities that they're probably going to find. Then verse 17, it says, and take the helmet of salvation. What's that? It's part of our faith. We're looking forward to eternal life with Christ, right? We're looking for salvation. We've heard about it. We've talked about it. Do we believe it? Again, knowing that no matter what happens in this physical life, God has a plan for me that is way better than all of this. And that's what I want. I want to seek the kingdom, whatever all it has to offer. Then the sword of the Spirit. Do we have a relationship with God where he wants to communicate with us on a very regular basis? Through his Spirit. Are we willing to listen to that Spirit? Are we then willing to act on that Spirit? The sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. So it comes right back around. Because one of the major ways, or probably the first way God talks to us, is through his word. If we're reading it, he's talking to us. If we're not reading it, boy, you're missing out on a great conversation. Verse 18 says, praying always with all prayer and supplication. And again, I can't see this because, hold on a second. See if this helps me. No, it's still there. There it goes. Praying with all in supplication in the Spirit, and watching thereunto with all perseverance and supplication for all saints. Praying always with all prayer and supplication. Do we pour our heart out to him? In the Spirit. Watching thereunto with all perseverance and supplication for all the saints. Do we look out for each other? Are we praying for each other? You know, one of the things that really got brought home to me through, you know, my ordination, then going to the feast for another ordination, and then a couple of other events that happened at the ordination, we need to be praying for each other because we are all called to be disciples of Christ, which means every single one of us are going to be given opportunities to disciple, and along with those opportunities is going to come a whole new set of challenges. We need to pray for each other that we are able to work through those challenges, that we have the strength, the courage, the wisdom, discernment. It's not just our leaders that need it, it's all of us that need this. You know, as we hear about somebody dealing with a situation, you know, again, you know, Dick is a friend who he's spending time with, trying to help do his best. We need to be praying for Dick in that relationship. Verse 19, and for me, that utterance may be given unto me, that I may open my mouth boldly to make known the mystery of the gospel, for which I am an ambassador in bonds, that therein I may speak boldly as I ought to speak. There Paul's just saying, you know what, and the leadership. We pray for each other, and we do pray for the leadership. But again, if we're not putting on this whole armor, we're truly giving Satan invitation. And we don't get to blame God, because God's made it very clear that we get to have opportunity of some type of hedge. Whether it's the same hedge of Job or the hedge of the armor, we get a layer of protection around us if we're seeking God and His will and His way and doing His commands. So are we? You know, take a new step forward in your prayer life, in your study life, and also in your life in terms of how you do His will, giving back to Him what He desires or what He commands. Do we do it in the way that is most honorable and glorifying to Him, or do we go about doing it in a way that, well, I can do it this way, but I'm not going to do it quite that way, and still expecting Him to bless us as being fully righteous?